Hello everyone, I'm Stephen Jolly. Welcome to this Talking Vision special from Vision Australia. On Friday, October the 26th, 2012, Vision Australia held its annual general meeting at its centre in Kooyong, Melbourne. Over the next couple of hours, we'll bring you coverage of AGM Day with the proceedings of the formal annual general meeting itself, the lunch, highlighted by words from special guest Senator Stephen Conroy, Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, a bit of a mouthful, and we will have time for other material covering some of the work of Vision Australia. By the way, another highlight at the lunch was the presentation of the annual Vision Australia Awards, and a special treat this time for listeners to 5RPH Adelaide. Listen out for that. Let's begin with the AGM, a 10:30 start on a Melbourne day where it was better to be indoors than outside. Now, the chair of Vision Australia is Dr. Kevin Murfitt. You may be interested to know that Kevin, being blind, organises his notes as audio prompts. So while speaking, he's also listening through the earpiece of his tiny electronic computer. So on we go now with the formal proceedings. Vision Australia Chair, Dr. Kevin Murfitt.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. My name is Kevin Murfitt and I'm the Chair of Vision Australia. And I'm very pleased to welcome you to our 2012 AGM. The Company Secretary has confirmed that we have a quorum present. And accordingly, I declare the AGM open. I now table the notice of AGM dated 27th of September 2012 that contains the business notice of business for today, and I'm informed that the requisite notice for the AGM together with the annual report was mailed to all members. I will take the notice of AGM as read. Now I'd like to introduce Uncle Perry for a welcome to country. Thank you, Uncle Perry.
Thank you, Kevin. My name's Perry Wannan. I'm a Wurundjeri senior elder. Wominjinka, Vision Australia. I'd like to thank you very much for inviting me here today. Welcome to the land of my father and ancestors, and my grandfather, actually, sorry. I acknowledge all my past and present elders. Today is a special day for me to be here. I thank you very much again. I'm very much involved at the moment doing welcomes to country, and it's making me get out to the more public sector to be able to talk freely, and it's not a very easy thing, but I seem I'm finding it a little bit easier, and I do thank you for that opportunity. The family tree of mine is the Wandan family, which we actually all come from Corindirk Mission up there in Hurlthorpe. The mission was actually, Corindirk Mission was opened in 1863 and was headed by my great-great-great-uncle, William Barrack. Now, William Barrack was the Nurungeeta. He was the head man of the Wurundjeri tribe, also known as Yarra Yarra, which we are called the Yarra Yarra people because of the Yarra River, which we actually travelled through and from the Great Dividing Range to Melbourne and then all adjoining rivers that connect to it. Today's, again, is like I said, I congratulate everybody here for being a member of Vision Australia and the board. I hope you all have a very good AGM. Like I said, to me it's very, very nice for us to be out here to get across how we can actually maybe one day become a membership, hopefully. There's nothing else to stop. But like I said, the AGM, I hope everything goes well today. Thank you for inviting me. Wominjinka, Wurundjeri, Yeman Kundi Bik, and I thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Uncle Perry, and you'd be more than welcome to be a member of Vision Australia. Now I'll pass to Robin Winslow, the host of Today in Focus, the Drive Time program on Vision Australia Radio, to lead us in an audio description of the plaza and a roll call of attendees. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Kevin. Today's event is being held in the plaza at Vision Australia's Kooyong site. The room is approximately 16 metres by 9 metres. It's located just behind the reception area. The plaza area seats approximately 60 people, theatre style. At the front of the room, there are two long tables, each seating representatives of Vision Australia's board and senior management. The tables have purple Vision Australia tablecloths and microphones.
And we won't trouble you with details of such matters as location of conveniences, dog runs for the dog guides and the emergency procedures, but it was all very thoroughly explained.
Now I'll read a roll call of who is here today. Isabel Barclay, Stephen Belvin, Megan Bishop, Mark Henry Boyd, Leighton Boyd, Rosemary Boyd, Debbie Cook, Stephen Crook, Malcolm Daubney, Beverly Daubney, Marianne Diamond, James P. Doherty, Marie Fennick, Lee Garwood, Morris Gleeson, Kenneth Gunning, Linda Hornsey, Bill Jolly, Stephen Jolly, Vicky Jolly, Carmel Jolly, Elizabeth Judd, Valerie Lynch, Ruth Mercer, Andrew Moffat, Peter North, Janine Sardou, Kevin Murphitt, Ernie Drew, Bob Claffey, Sue Nettie, Neil Maxwell, Elizabeth Maxwell, Michael Simpson, Susan Oriander, Marjorie West, Glenda Alexander, Robin Gale, Ramona Mandy, Natalie Kutri, Jim Luxem, Uncle Perry, Michael Coker, Rita Townsend Booth, Sam Monahan, Arlene Pacheco, Nicole Misso, Tony Clark, Jamie Kelly, Bernadette Jolly, Sandy Makovikius, Rebecca Hudson, Rita Giles, Amy Feldman, Linda Sloan, Deb Renshaw Jones, Brian Hunter, Chris Boyle, Andrew Nicholson, Lauren Nicholson, and Chris Edwards. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Robin. My fellow directors and senior management on the dais will now introduce themselves, starting from the table on my left.
Some of this a little difficult to hear, but stick with us, it won't be for long.
I'm Owen Vanderwall. I'm a retired banker. I'm Deputy Chair of Vision Australia and a Sydney-based director.
Good morning. David Speyer, Acting CEO.
Good morning. I'm Teresa Smith-Ruig, a New South Wales Board Director and Senior Lecturer at the University of New England Business School.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Keith Barton. I'm a board member from Sydney, and I'm also the Chairman of the HR Committee.
Good morning, I'm Paul Gleeson. I'm a lawyer, I'm a board member from here in Melbourne. I'm also the Chair of the Audit, Finance and Business Risk Committee.
I'm Donald Fraser, I'm a director here from Victoria. I have a career of some 30 years or more in the IT field and I joined the CEDA board some 5 years ago.
Morning, I'm Andrew Moffat. I'm a commercial mediator, previously a banker. I am based in Melbourne and I joined the board last year.
Those first two names you may have missed, Stephen Crook, Company Secretary, and Lynn Ellison, Board Member and former leader of the Australian Democrats, by the way.
I have some apologies. One from fellow director Professor Ron McCallum, also fellow directors Nick Carter and Ross McColl, who are unable to attend today's meeting. I'd like to quickly recognise also Robert Collier from Deloitte, our external auditor. Thanks for being here. The minutes of the 2011 Annual General Meeting have, in keeping with modern business practice, been approved by the board and signed by myself. A copy of these minutes was circulated with the notice of meeting.
Vision Australia Chair Kevin Murfitt. On Vision Australia Radio, associated stations of RPH Australia, we're bringing you a Talking Vision special, the annual general meeting of Vision Australia, the lunch later on, all held in Melbourne on Friday, October the 26th. The Chair's report now, Kevin.
Again, a warm welcome to you all, and thank you for attending what is a significant date in any organisation's calendar, the annual general meeting. I also wish to acknowledge the original inhabitants of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This meeting of company members, directors and the Chief Executive Officer provides a demonstration of transparency and accountability as the fundamental tenets of good governance. Adhering to the principles of good governance is as critical today as ever. Vision Australia, and we're not alone, is going through a period of rapid change as we respond to the evolving public policy and political environment. We are going through a period of having to closely manage the number of employees, better understand the client profile, ensure we develop an open and transparent culture, ensure that staff have the resources and the information they need, and refreshing our constitution. All underpinned by the continuing need for prudent financial management. By this time next year, Vision Australia's deficit will be well on the way to break even. By this time next year, Vision Australia will be in the thick of the introduction of the National Disability Insurance Scheme in the test sites of Barwon, Hunter Valley, and also the ACT. By this time next year, we will be supporting greater client choice with the services they want. And by this time next year, we will have broadened our already comprehensive client representative and consultative framework. Perhaps now is the time that we remind ourselves that our governance structure is sound and that there is a clear delineation between the role of the directors and the executive leadership of the organisation. The board has an oversighting role and acts on behalf of and is accountable to members. The board monitors changes in government policy and community expectations, and the role of the board and its relation with management is governed by board and committee agreed charters. The responsibility for operations and administration is delegated by the board to the Chief Executive Officer. The board, Chief Executive Officer, and the management team lead the corporate strategic direction. The board meets every 8 weeks and monitors the achievements of service targets and financial objectives against budget and other key performance indicators. Our board committees are proactive, strategic, and appropriately address the statutory and ethical responsibilities of directors through 5 committees, and they are the Audit, Finance and Business Risk Committee, the Client Services Committee, the Human Resources Committee, the Property Committee, and the Board Development and Nominations Committee. We are comforted by the fact that this organisation now manages a contemporary and relevant risk management register, that new channels of communication with all our stakeholders have been opened up over the reporting period, that we have reaffirmed that our clients are the centre of our focus, that we are moving to a policy-based organisation, and that we're increasingly seen to be a human rights organisation, standing up for the rights of people who are blind or have low vision. We're also making enduring connections with our political decision makers, for example, with the Minister for Communications and the Digital Economy, delivering a keynote address with us in a short time. We are comforted by the fact that the cultural development of our staff is making real progress, and the career paths are being developed for those people who choose to work at Vision Australia, taking a professional and skilled approach for the benefit of our clients and our credibility. Achievements in the past year should also not be underestimated. Meeting here in Kooyong today reminds me that earlier this year, in May, I was here to sign and celebrate the launch of our Reconciliation Action Plan. This is another milestone that speaks to human rights, inclusiveness, and sound employment practices. With this plan and new partnerships, we are building a bridge to the future, especially through such initiatives as joining the National Aged Care Alliance and driving the VidKids Alliance. The latter is described in more detail later, and it's in the annual report, but is an expert consortium of providers led by Vision Australia, delivering services through the national broadband network to children who are deaf, blind, or deafblind. The year just gone has also been challenging, and I want to thank our dedicated staff and volunteers for sharing the load. I want to thank members of the CRC and all our supportive clients, and it's also important to recognise that our directors are volunteers. They give their time because of a sense of sincere commitment they share for ensuring that people who are blind or have low vision get the support they need for social and economic independence. As Vision Australia embraces change, it is important to note that we strongly support the National Disability Insurance Scheme and its policy underpinnings. However, we are also putting in a big effort to ensure that people with low vision, which affects their functionality, are eligible for assessment and supports within the proposed scheme. We are also advocating for people who may be ineligible by virtue of their age, if the line is drawn at 65. We want to make sure those clients over 65, and they are the majority, will not be disadvantaged but continue to receive the supports they need. The scheme represents a major change in the funding model, away from block or program funding to self-directed funding. Vision Australia has taken a proactive approach, with specialised staff working for almost a year, researching the opportunities and challenges that this presents. This work continues. And the challenges continue, but we're confident we will meet those challenges. Finally, I want to acknowledge that Gerard Menzies left Vision Australia this past financial year after almost 8 years as CEO, having contributed much to the mergers and the creation of the new organisation. David Speyer has acted as CEO since May with great enthusiasm and commitment, and I now have much pleasure in introducing our acting CEO, David Speyer. Thank you.
That was the report from Vision Australia Chair Dr. Kevin Murfitt. And as foreshadowed, next up, Acting CEO David Speyer.
I too wish to acknowledge the original inhabitants of this land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to deliver the CEO's report today. This annual general meeting of members, staff and Vision Australia community gives us cause to pause and reflect on the year that has passed and the times that are yet to come. As the Chair has said, this has been a year of great change on many fronts, including the departure of the CEO, which is why I'm standing here as your acting CEO. I'd like to thank the Chair and the Board for the leadership and support they've provided throughout the year, and to the Executive Team for their unwavering support through challenging times. And to our dedicated staff, thank you for your commitment and support. The Annual General Meeting shines a spotlight on the past year to account for the successes and the challenges and to give an assurance that our organisation remains relevant and that we are fulfilling our commitment to people who are blind or have low vision to fully access and participate in every part of life they choose. And whilst we are gathered here today in this room to discuss such matters, our committed and passionate staff are out there in dozens of communities across this country, working with people. Let's take an example, an 80-year-old woman who's learning new skills to remain independent in her own home, now that her sight has failed. Teaching a young boy orientation and mobility skills so that he may travel independently to school. And building the confidence of a young lady seeking her first job whilst going to an interview. This is what Vision Australia is all about. It's about the people we serve, the clients, the staff, the volunteers, and making a significant difference to people's lives. So how are we doing? During the last year alone, our service delivery staff delivered a staggering 270,000 hours of client support and worked with over 33,000 people of all ages, in all situations, and in different stages of need. This is remarkable and creates a picture of the enormity of our role in the sector. But we strive to do more, to reach to more people, to improve the outcomes for those we work with. And to do that, we have to be working smarter. We have to find new ways of delivering services. And we are doing just that. And we are already achieving many of the targets that we have set. During the past 12 months, we've recorded a 9.3% growth in the number of active clients that we support. Although we do acknowledge that the referrals that we receive are down, and they've been down by 12%. And to address that, we've reinvigorated and energised an initiative working in Victoria with the Victorian Vision Collaborative, to look at the referral pathways. And we're doing that with the Eye and Ear Hospital, the College of Optometry, Vision 2020 and Guide Dogs Victoria. In orientation mobility, our services are up by 55% on targets that we set. We've registered a total of 238 Seeing Eye Dog clients and recorded 191 working Seeing Eye Dog partnerships around Australia. Impressively, we've achieved a 56% increase in job placements compared with last year and a 21% increase in the number of employment clients that we support. And as Kevin has mentioned, we've led the consortium known as the Vic Kids Alliance in securing $4.1 million to support children living in rural areas who are blind or hearing impaired. Significantly, we have seen a recovery during the last 12 months in our client satisfaction, which now stands at 91%. With a new era of self-directed funding ahead of us, keeping that metric at its present level will be a measure of the relevance and quality of our services. Our interaction with clients extends beyond service provision, and 18 new LCGs, or local client groups, were established this year, taking the total to 60. This is a testament to the level of involvement with our clients and that which they want to have in the way we run the organisation. We're taking engagement, information sharing and listening to new levels. As Kevin mentioned, financial sustainability and stability is essential as we track towards a break-even in 2015. You've already heard that we've reduced the operating deficit, and we've brought that down to $1.126 million in the last financial year, which was a significant reduction on the preceding year's figure. This is a positive step towards sustainability, achieved through significant improvement in fundraising, cost management efficiencies, and aligning our staffing levels with our capacity to fund services. Underpinning a lot of our work is our ability to grow our reputation as a trusted and respected authority with clients, staff, funders, volunteers, and the government. 28 presentations and submissions to government, 24% increase in media coverage, and an increased number of people tuning into our flagship event, Carols by Candlelight, on the Nine Network, have helped us meet that objective. This ability to implement and amplify our voice is becoming increasingly vital to ensure the longevity and effectiveness of the work we do. We're doing that, as Kevin has said, in a new and a renewed spirit of collaboration in the sector with the guide dog organisations, with RSB in South Australia, RIDBC, Vision 2020 and BCA. And we are uniting in the way we deliver our message to government as a sector. Most recently, that was evident in the submission through Vision 2020 on the eligibility and support criteria under the NDIS. Looking to the future, we are addressing the changing landscape and the move towards self-directed funding and greater client choice. Changes in the approach of government funding that we very much support. But to be ready for that change, we are analysing every part of the organisation, every service, every support area, and we are evaluating the outcomes that we help achieve so that we can ensure the foundations are strong to build for a future in a fundamentally new and different era. We are working hard to influence the architects of what will become the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and we're working on both sides of the aisle to make sure that whoever's in power has heard our view of what needs to be in place under the NDIS. Our planning will ensure our readiness, even if the future is largely uncertain. And in a conversation last night with Senator Fifield, it's very clear that there's a lot of uncertainty around the NDIS. Listening to our clients is a significant part of ensuring the change in our services are founded on client need and what clients want. Our clients will increasingly become our customers, our consumers of the future. The change in the funding model, as directed by the government, will change the basis to one of more choice and independence. And as I've said before, that's a change that we support. We must, as we look to the future, make sure our services and the services that we offer match the requirements of our consumer or customer. Measuring our performance against outcomes is fundamental in running a good service, and Vision Australia is no exception. We do that now, and we have to do more as we shift to a listening and acting on the voice of the customer. We need to build on our achievements, learn from our mistakes, and take advantage of new opportunities. This is not a solo venture. We're already starting to involve many of you in the consultation process, and we seek more engagement as we move forward. And we're building our relationship with you on a number of fronts, whether you support us through membership, through donation, through volunteering, or through your work here at Vision Australia. As we face up to a new era, we will face many challenging decisions, and I'm sure there will be conflicting opinions and there will be debate. But I do believe that we all agree on where we want to end up, that we share the same motivation in wanting the best outcomes for people who are blind or have low vision living in Australia. We share this incentive, and we must use that to drive us, unite us, and motivate us. Now for one last statistic. 98% of our clients currently tell us that they would readily recommend Vision Australia's services to others. 98%. This is a strong vote of faith. It is now our responsibility to take this goodwill into a new era of greater choice so that the 80-year-old client can remain independent at home, that the young schoolboy can safely travel to work to his school, and the 25-year-old woman who is blind can get the job she really wants. That is what we're all about. Thank you.
Vision Australia Acting CEO David Speyer. On Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia, we're bringing you coverage of the annual general meeting of Vision Australia. Don't forget that later in this program, we'll hear Senator Stephen Conroy, Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, speaking to the post-AGM luncheon. The Minister covers a number of topics with encouraging comments about the future of audio description on ABC television. Now the time in any AGM when directors get a little nervous.
We now turn to the receipt and the consideration of this year's annual report and annual financial statements, director's report and auditor's report for the financial year ended June 2012. These reports accompany the annual report, which was sent to all members. Now, if any members have questions on matters reported in these documents or more generally, I think we have Amy with the mic. Good, there you are. Please raise your hand and Amy can come to you with a roving mic. Okay, no questions from anybody? Okay, thank you.
No questions. Incidentally, if you'd like to have a look at the Vision Australia annual report, including the financial statements, you can find them from the Vision Australia website, visionaustralia.org. Now we come to the declaration of a couple of polls, one the election of directors and the other a proposal for amendments to the Vision Australia Constitution.
We will move to the next item of business, the announcement of the declaration of the result of the postal ballot for the election of directors for 2012. I will hand over to our company secretary, Stephen Crook, to announce the result. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Kevin. There are four vacancies to fill. Owen van der Waal, Nick Carter, Jan Lovey-Kitchen and Ross McColl have completed their terms of directors and in accordance with Vision Australia's constitution retired and offer themselves for re-election. As is usual practice, a postal ballot has been held in accordance with the current constitution to fill these vacancies. Ballot papers were mailed to Vision Australia's 647 members, with the ballot closing on last Tuesday the 23rd. Four candidates nominated for the four positions available, with those receiving a simple majority of votes cast in favour being elected. The results of the postal ballot are Owen van der Waal, 174 for, 25 against, 19 abstain. Nick Carter, 168 for, 33 against, 18 abstain. Jan Lovey-Kitchen, 187 for, 19 against, 13 abstain. Ross McColl, 183 for, 22 against, and 14 abstain. Accordingly, I declare the following have been duly elected as directors for a new 3-year term from the close of this meeting: Owen van der Waal, Nick Carter, Jan Lovey-Kitchen and Ross McColl. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I congratulate those directors and look forward to working with them in the future. Now we'll announce the result of the special resolution to adopt a new constitution for Vision Australia. And I will hand over again to Company Secretary Stephen Crook.
Thank you, Kevin. In accordance with the Constitution, to change the Constitution, a postal ballot was conducted, and it, as a result of needing a special resolution where we need 75% of the members to vote in favour of a change. The resolution will only be passed if it achieves 75% or greater. The results of the postal ballot are 487, against 25, abstain is 10. Accordingly, as 84% of members voted in favour of the changes, I declare that the new constitution will be adopted as at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning per the notice provided. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen, and thank you, members. Now, just before I close the official business for the day, you'd be aware that there is a recruitment process underway for a new CEO for Vision Australia. I am pleased to announce that the board yesterday endorsed the recommended candidate from the selection committee. A communication will be distributed early next week, as we still have a couple of contractual items to finalise. But I just wanted to let you know today that we've got some good news.
And we'll keep you in touch with developments there on the weekly Vision Australia radio program, Talking Vision, which you can also find from our website, visionaustralia.org/talkingvision. Check with your local station about broadcast times for that weekly radio program on blindness and low vision, Talking Vision. That's the conclusion of the formal part of the annual general meeting. There's much more to come.
Now, the final thing for this part of the day is my great pleasure in introducing the Chair of the Client Representative Council, Stephen Balban, to say a few words to us. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I just wanted to very briefly give a little bit of an overview of, the CRC, just quickly what it is, and some of the achievements that the CRC have done this year. Some have been touched on, but I'd like to expand a little bit on a couple of those areas. The CRC, for people who aren't aware, is the peak body made up of council of elected client members, and also as part of that council we have representatives from board representatives, executive members of the executive who all are ex officio members, and it makes up a team. And the information we feed back through to the board and management, the opportunity to do that is actually happens at those meetings. So through the framework, which consists of the local client groups, as David's already mentioned this morning, and look, it's so overwhelming and encouraging to know that it's increased now to 60. It's gone up about almost, I think, about 18 local client groups in the last 12 months, which is a fantastic effort. The feedback from those people, which are the grassroots, through the regional client committee, the middle level, and to us, is what it's all about, the communication. Sometimes, raising issues, but often just having that link back through clients is very important. And I think it can be identified in some of the achievements that over the last 12 months, certainly have been ongoing for a lot longer than 12 months, but certainly in the last 12 months have come to fruition. A couple of those areas, as Kevin mentioned, the Reconciliation Action Plan, which was lodged on, I remember the day, it was the Tuesday, May 29th this year. I was present for that historic occasion. And that document and that commitment by the organisation to Reconciliation in Australia was not only an historical and, I believe, a real turning opportunity for the organisation. And to demonstrate, further commitment to that, part of the commitment in that plan is to increase the opportunity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander clients who are blind or have low vision to be able to gain employment within the organisation. And I'm pleased to say that not only was the RAP actually launched, but since then,
There have been three traineeships identified in regional areas, one at the Newcastle Centre, the Wollongong Centre, and the Albury Centre. And they were for traineeships for community development workers, and they were specifically targeted for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander clients. Two of those positions have actually been filled, the Newcastle and Wollongong, so with the third one to come. So I just think that demonstrates not only the commitment, but it demonstrates, the power of a large organisation to step forward and saying and really promote the importance of inclusion of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the community. So for me, that was very, very exciting. And I think that the RAP and the commitment and everything will just continue to grow as time goes on. The other thing, too, was we take things very seriously around communication with the organisation, from the organisation to its clients. And as most people would be aware here, one of the things that the clients are very passionate about is about receiving news, what's happening in the organisation, events, what's happening with the client consultative framework and so forth. This year, just before the last AGM, a new audio magazine was produced. It just started just before the AGM, actually, called Vision Australia Roundup, which Stephen Jolly has a lot to do with driving that whole production. That now has grown in its distribution, and it's a situation now where clients can subscribe to it, so they just ring up and provide their name and details. It's posted out to them. So it's grown in distribution, and it just shows between that, the Your Vision Australia audio CD as well. And now in the last 4 months, we also heard from clients who want to know a little bit more about what's happening within the organisation, as in sometimes some of the things that can be commented on about perhaps what's happening within the structure and changes, NDIS, all those sort of areas. So now there's a monthly bulletin that's produced. I believe it's usually by Kirsten McCombie from the client consultation and engagement team, and also Stephen Jolly as well. And that's sent out each month. And at the moment, it's in an electronic format. But the CRC are certainly working closely to see if it can be produced in other formats as well, in collaboration with AIS, Accessible Information Solutions. So that's another area that's been an achievement this year. One other one this year too was around the value, the feedback we received around quality living groups and having the option of not only telephone-based meetings, but also the value of face-to-face meetings. And I'm pleased to say that the support, the CRC put it forward, and the support from Glenda Alexander and her team, that has been retained, and it actually has grown a little bit since it was actually put on the table for discussion. So that's another area I think that was put forward. Just in closing, there are some things that are ongoing discussions with the CRC and certainly the executive and board. And they are things around the peer support program. There's a current discussion around peers and what's happening in that area, and especially about having a bit more of a consistent, approach and model right throughout the states, Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, and ongoing discussions are happening, and it looks quite fruitful at the moment. The and also the reintroduction of the Speakers Network. It's a remodeled model of the Speakers Network, and CRC have been very involved in that. And I'm pleased to say that recently at an RCC face-to-face meetings in New South Wales, and I believe it with the information will be shared also when included with Victoria, that there will be an opportunity for some of those RCC members to actually join the Speakers Network and be a voice for the organisation in some of those areas where up until now speakers may not have been available, some of the service delivery areas. And also to recreation is something that's on the table for discussion at the moment as well, the importance of recreation and where do we go from here and how can we perhaps expand some of the good things that are certainly available in Victoria and maybe perhaps get those across into some other states as well. And finally, discussion that's happened very recently is the rollout of up-to-date Microsoft and adaptive technology, i.e. screen reader software and magnification software, on all Vision Australia training computers at all centres. It's just about there. I've been told that within a couple of weeks that you'll be able to walk in and, you know, Office 2010 and I believe JAWS 13 and latest version of Magic and so forth will be there. So we'll be watching that one very close, but if it does happen, that's a fantastic step forward. I'd just like to take one more opportunity to just thank the CRC members individually and just mention, as I go through them, there are some present here today. So if people have any questions, further questions about the CRC, the consultative framework, or anything I've mentioned here, some of the areas that we're working in, just catch up with us during lunch. We'll get one of the volunteers to point you over to one of us. So the current CRC membership, starting in Queensland, one of our newest members is Wendy Noakes, who is located in Cairns, Queensland. New South Wales at the moment is myself. It's Region 4. Wendy's Region 5. Region 3 is Peter Davis. Region 2 is Ernie Drew, and Ernie's here today. And Region 1 is Brian Hunter, and I believe Brian was called out. Are you here, Brian? He's here as well. Thank you. And we have some representative, a co-opted member who couldn't be here today, Rosemary Wills, who represents parents of children with a child with vision impairment. And also, too, we have a representative here, Bill Jolly, who is the CRC representative for AIS, Accessible Information Systems. And also, too, I believe Bill is also now chair of that committee. So thank you to those CRC members. And they do a great job. They put a lot of hours in, and I think there's a great connection there between the CRC, the board and management, and I look forward to the next 12 months and some of the achievements. Thank you.
Chair of Vision Australia's Client Representative Council, Stephen Belbin.
Just before I close the meeting, I do want to especially thank Meg, Deb and Amy, Linda and Faye from the comms team, Dale and Stephen, who are doing the sound up there, doing a marvellous job for a later broadcast as well, and also Stephen, our company secretary and your team, Stephen, thank you very much. David Speyer, our acting CEO, and Sam and Giselle, and also my fellow directors. Everyone's played a key role in developing our annual general meeting, and it's very much appreciated. This does now bring our meeting to a close. Thank you very much for everyone for being a part of the 2012 AGM.
On Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia, we're bringing you coverage of Vision Australia's annual General Meeting Day events. It all happened at Vision Australia's Kooyong Centre, Melbourne, on Friday, October the 26th. Well, just after the morning proceedings, there was a bit of a break. People caught up with old friends and met new ones. And then we settled down to a very pleasant luncheon. It was emceed by Jan Chisholm, who's Vision Australia's General Manager, Fundraising. Jan.
Ladies and gentlemen, forgive me for interrupting the introductions and the chats. My name is Jan Chisholm. I have the very fortunate position of being the General Manager for Fundraising at Vision Australia, and I'll be your MC for this afternoon's lunch. And my first task is to welcome you all, welcome Vision Australia's members, our donors, Senator Conroy and his staff, our corporate supporters, our staff, our volunteers, and very special guests today. Welcome to you all to this special luncheon to thank our supporters and donors for their support of Vision Australia and to celebrate the achievements of people who are blind or have low vision through the handing out of the Vision Australia Awards. Before I move on, can I please just ask you to thank Dean Carland and Christian Kupsch, our violinists, who've been entertaining us as we came into the room. Thank you both so much. And I should let you know that this event is being recorded for broadcast on Vision Australia Radio. So if you enjoy it today, you can listen to it all over again over the weekend on Vision Australia Radio. As is customary at Vision Australia events, I will just provide an audio description of the environment in which we're meeting today. Today's event is being held in the day centre at Vision Australia's Kooyong site. The room is approximately 25 metres by 9 metres, and we're located just before the library. This day centre has around 70 people seated at round tables, and I'm standing at the front of the room where there's a small stage with a lectern and a microphone. I would like to acknowledge and respect the traditional custodians, the Wurundjeri tribe, whose ancestral lands we're meeting upon here today. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of our Aboriginal peoples to country. We also pay respects to the cultural authority of our Aboriginal people attending from other areas of Australia and present here with us today. Finally, I would like to mention that while we're enjoying this special lunch, around Australia today, other Australians are gathering to have disabilities, that's T-E-A-S, to build community support around the Every Australian Counts campaign to build support for the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Today, morning and afternoon teas and lunch events are being held to keep the pressure on our politicians to legislate and fully fund, I'm looking at you, Senator Conroy, to legislate and fully fund this very important scheme, which is designed to provide more support and person-centred support for people with a disability. So the welcomes are over. Please enjoy your meal.
And it was a pleasant meal. And by the way, Dean and Christian, the two violinists, are just two of the many outstanding talents that we do have in the blindness and low vision community. Great musicians. Senator Conroy coming up very, very shortly, following him, those Vision Australia awards. Listen out, you people in Adelaide.
Forgive me, I'm afraid that my job this afternoon is to interrupt you when you're enjoying yourselves and having fun. Please carry on eating, but I would like to start the formal proceedings. And to kick us off, I'd like to introduce our Deputy Chair of the Vision Australia Board, Mr. Owen van der Waal, who's going to introduce our guest speaker today.
Thanks, Jan. And might I say, it's a great honour to be here with all of you today, our most valued supporters. Vision Australia services support every stage of life. We work with our clients to help them achieve whatever they choose in life. Might it be helping families with small children to prepare the transition to school, or assisting senior Australians to adapt to the challenges of age-related vision loss. Your support is crucial to the ability to deliver these services to our clients. Income from fundraising, in fact, contributed 44% of our total income this year. So you can see just how vital your support is. So to all of you, we say a real heartfelt thanks for that support. We're also thankful for the support of government, and it is with pleasure that I introduce our guest speaker today. Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy was first appointed to represent Victoria in the Senate in 1996. He is the Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, and the Minister assisting the Prime Minister on digital productivity. He is also the Deputy Leader of the Government in the Senate. Recently, I'm pleased to say, the Minister has worked closely with Vision Australia to implement three important projects, and I'll just outline them for you. The first is the audio description trial currently underway on the ABC television. That's a nice message for the Minister, I'm sure he heard that. The national rollout of the talking set-top box as part of the digital switchover household assistance scheme is the second one, Minister. And the third one is very exciting. It's the VidKids project. Now, this is an innovative project funded through the Federal Department of Family, Housing, Community Services and Indigenous Affairs. VidKids provides a nationwide program of vision and hearing services for children delivered through video conferencing to iPads and laptop computers. The VidKids Consortium is made up of Vision Australia and Deaf Children Australia, and 5 independent paediatric hearing services. And these are the Hear and Say Centre in Queensland, Turralee, Victoria, Telethon Speech and Hearing Western Australia, the Cora Barclay Centre in South Australia, and the Shepherd Centre in New South Wales and the ACT. Collectively, they're known as First Voice. Now, given the role that technology plays in enhancing lives of people who are blind or have low vision, we are keen now to hear from the Minister about other opportunities the National Broadband Network will deliver to our clients. Thanks, Minister. I welcome you to the podium.
Well, good afternoon, and could I thank you for the opportunity to be here and speak with you today. It is a great honour to have the opportunity to talk to such an extraordinary organisation. Vision Australia makes a real difference in the lives of Australians who are blind or with low vision. Its work enables them to access and fully participate in activities that many others take for granted. This work often goes unnoticed in the wider public domain, but certainly not by the hundreds of thousands of Australians that Vision Australia supports each and every day. Now, I should particularly acknowledge Dr. Kevin Murphitt, the Chair of Vision Australia, Deputy Chair Owen van der Waal, the President of the World Blind Union, Mary-Ann Diamond, Peter Nankervel, Chair of the Centre for Eye Research, Emeritus Professor Ron McCallum, and Vision Australia's Acting CEO, David Speyer. One of the core principles of the Gillard government is to ensure equality of opportunity for all Australians, wherever they live and whatever their background. These principles are enshrined in our National Digital Economy Strategy, which envisions universal participation in an NBN-enabled digital economy. The strategy ranges over just about every aspect of activity in our lives, and its goals have been set accordingly. Supporting people with health concerns or disability, including blindness and low vision, are major priorities of this overarching plan for a digital Australia. The digital economy is opening up new opportunities across Australian society. It is an exciting time for our country. And for Australians who face barriers to communicating, there are new possibilities to use technology to improve their lives. Our strategy meshes well with the government's implementation of the findings of the Review of Access to Telecommunications Services. In August, the government announced it would accept all recommendations of this review, which was conducted by my department. The review's recommendations were consistent with the Gillard government's National Disability Strategy. This is a 10-year national plan for a unified national approach to policy and program development. It's designed to improve life for all Australians with disability, their families, and carers, including matters of access and equity for the blind and those with low vision. Throughout our time in government, our focus has been to deliver programs and services for those Australians most in need. The National Broadband Network's universal high-speed broadband provides the platform to improve the delivery of services to Australians with disability. These services include accessing government support, online commerce or banking, and the NBN can make these available for the first time to regional Australians with hearing or vision impairment. Let me also provide an update on some of our other initiatives. And one of the issues that people who are blind, who have low vision, have faced is accessing the benefits of digital television, and no one mentioned. In May, I did announce that talking set-top boxes would be provided under the government's Household Assistance Scheme. And the scheme provides technical and practical assistance for eligible recipients to switch from analogue to digital TV. Talking set-top boxes allow blind or low-vision people to more easily access the significantly enhanced benefits of digital television. So the talking set-top box was developed with the expert guidance and support of Vision Australia, among others. And I do again want to thank Vision Australia for the advice and support that it has provided. Without your contribution, this policy would have been much more difficult to have achieved and to reach this point. Another Australian first. I know many of you have been enjoying, and when you mentioned it just before, we saw exactly how much, is the ABC's technical trial of audio description television. Now, this has been a trial, and the thing about trials is we like to learn what's good, what's bad, what needs changed, what can stay. So this 13-week trial has tested the production, distribution and reception of audio-described programs. The trial was commissioned as part of the government's strong and positive response to the recommendations of the Media Access Review. Once the trial concludes, the ABC will report to the government, and that report will include advice on the technical and financial issues associated with delivering audio described programs. It will also include the findings from all of your feedback. Now, the early indications from the ABC suggest that viewer reaction has been mixed to date. There have been some positive feedback, but there has also been some complaints. Over 1,000 complaints have come from people who have experienced disruptions to reception or the ability to record ABC One because of the trial. So the government will carefully consider the ABC's report in the context of all of the issues affecting the converging digital broadcast environment. Clearly, however, we must address and resolve those technical issues that have emerged during the trial. And our goal is to ensure that we can create and fund a sustainable audio description platform free from technical problems in the future. And our commitment is to improve access to electronic media for people with a disability remains strong, as is demonstrated by the passage of the Media Access Bill. We will maintain that commitment as we work through the issues associated with the provision of audio description. But just from that response we had earlier, it is something that no government will get away with shirking any longer. We have to continue the progress that we've made over the last 6 months or so. Now, the Gillard government is also working hard to achieving urgent disability reform through our initiative, the National Disability Insurance Scheme. We see the NDIS in terms of human rights and equality for all Australians with a disability. It is the biggest social reform Australia has seen since the introduction of Medicare. The NDIS will put control over services and support into the hands of those that use them. The NDIS will give people with disability, their families and carers, certainty that they will receive support over their lifetimes, and the NDIS will bring peace of mind that if something happens to them or to a loved one, there will be a helping hand. So when you combine with the National Broadband Network and what that will mean for initiatives like telehealth, you can see the government is pursuing important disability reform. NBN-powered telehealth allows consultations to be conducted from the patient's home to the practitioner's office. It doesn't matter where the patient is or where the medical help is coming from. And multiple qualified specialists in the consultation will be able to come online and join in the discussions. So this allows people to stay in their homes for longer if they choose, instead of being moved into specialised care facilities. And that's of particular importance to patients, many of whom have eye problems in regional, rural and remote Australia. I've just come from a launch of a clinicians online at the Alfred. And it was fabulous. We were talking to a patient in their home in Horsham, talking to a patient in their home in Warrnambool. We had video conference. We had a really simple, easy video conference facility that you just checked into. You just pressed a button, there it was. We brought health records up on the screen. We brought other specialists in. We had discussions with the patients among the health specialists. The ease with which this technology is now advancing and the software that now is behind it is making such a dramatic impact on health care and health services. So we're very, very excited about where we're at the moment. All of this work comes together for the Gillard government about service delivery and equity. And it's all underpinned by our very significant investment in the national broadband network. You will see a lot of arguments about the NBN in the papers, but when you go to a function like I've just come from, when you come here and talk with those of you who know that the opportunities are going to be opened up when you're connected at your home, all of that melts away. So the rollout of the NBN, despite what you may read in the newspapers, is now gathering pace. There are now 26,000 Australians using the NBN today. In Victoria, the fibre rollout will have commenced or be completed for 114,000 homes and businesses by the end of this year. And the company is on track to have fibre construction commenced or completed right across Australia of 758,000 premises by the end of this calendar year. And when speaking about the importance of the NBN, one of our broadband champions, Australia's Disability Discrimination Commissioner, Graham has said the following. For people who are blind or have low vision, such as myself, I'll be able to get access to audio and braille books in seconds rather than waiting for the cassettes or CDs to arrive in the snail mail. The most important thing for people with a disability in Australia is to be able to participate on an equal basis in the Australian community and be included in the Australian community. And he went on to say the national broadband network will be one of the things which facilitates that process. So Graham's words highlight my great satisfaction for what the government and Vision Australia have achieved in partnership. And I'm moved when I read on your website about the use of new technologies to help people, like Karen, legally blind since 19, who uses assistive technology at work. This includes a CCTV camera to magnify text and a program that reads emails. Or Rolf, who went on an audio-described tour of the Japanese gardens at Gosford. Audio description enhances enjoyment, and he remarked, "I can hear the water and feel the rocky paths, but I can't see the garden." So through the NBN and through policies like the NDIS, the Gillard government is embarking on reform that will make a difference in the lives of every Australian. We cannot do this alone. It is only together with organisations like Vision Australia that reforms of this magnitude can take place. So I'm looking forward to continue working with Vision Australia and the wider community to deliver on all of our programs. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here to speak to you today. And I understand the AGM went well. There was no boardroom coup. It was a very tame affair, I hear, which is great. I've been through a few AGMs myself. So I want to congratulate all of the elected office bearers and look forward to working with you into the future. Thank you very much.
Senator Stephen Conroy speaking to Vision Australia supporters at the annual general meeting lunch on Friday the 26th of October at Kooyong in Melbourne. And we're bringing you this Talking Vision special on Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia. Following his address, the Minister took some questions.
Minister, it's Robin Gale from Blind Citizens Australia and also a member of Vision Australia. First up, I just wanted to, on behalf of people who are blind or vision impaired, I just wanted to commend you and your team on the fabulous work that you have done with regard to the social inclusion of people who are blind or vision impaired. It's through accessing television and cinema and all forms of media that we can actually be a part of that bigger Australian culture. So I really do want to congratulate you on that. Yeah. And my question to you is, with regard to audio description on television, what plans do you have once the trial has and the report has been received? We'd love there to be pressure exerted on the commercial stations as well so that we can have full access to audio description on ABC. What discussions or what plans do you have around that particular matter?
Look, I sort of follow on from the, I think, pretty successful discussions we had with the cinemas. For those of you who were involved, Bill Shorten convened a couple of meetings, and initially the cinema owners were reluctant to provide enough screens with the sort of services that are needed. So first step, the trial. Second step, make sure we get the bugs ironed out of the trial. Keep talking with the ABC. Then we'll start sitting down with the TV stations to say, hey, let's see what we can do here. Now, they are going through a tough time at the moment. They would tell you they can't afford to do anything, that it's just too hard and we should come back later. But I suspect the tide of sentiment that is coming across the nation, and one of the most incredibly well-supported policies we've put forward is the NDIS. I think if we can capture the sentiment that is behind NDIS, we can wear down the TV stations, we can wear down those commercial TVs who I think would like to do it, but we'll try and argue cost and all those sorts of technical issues. But if we've solved that, if we can sit down with them in the same way we did with the cinema owners, who were reluctant, who were very reluctant at the beginning, but I envisage that once we've got those bugs worked out, we'll start sitting down with them and say, OK, let's start working out how we can roll this out in a way that you guys participate in.
We have another question. The microphone's coming to you, Michael.
Thank you, Dan. Minister, it's Michael Simpson. Can I congratulate you particularly, but this government on the development of the talking set-top box. If it weren't for your department, blind people would not have access to digital TV through that talking set-top box that we now enjoy today. The question I have of you, Minister, is really about a comment that you made in your speech. You talked about the comment that Graeme Innes made about receiving audio and braille material in seconds rather than waiting for snail mail. Vision Australia currently sends out around 650,000 CDs in the mail to our clients every year. It's a fabulous service and one supported by your government through the postal concession scheme run by your colleague Jenny Macklin through Faxia. As we move to new delivery systems, we want to make sure that we don't lose the benefit of what you're currently providing through the postal concession scheme to agencies like Vision Australia. It means that we nor our clients have to meet the costs of the postage for all of that material. But we want to make sure that as we transition to new delivery systems, such as online through the National Broadband Network, that we don't lose the benefit of that commitment that your government and previous governments have made. So I'm wondering how we need to work with you, both your department and your colleagues, Jenny Macklin, to make sure that we can have those funds transition from one department to another as the delivery systems change.
Yeah, look, we are very determined. Firstly, look, it is a controversial subject, as I said, the NBN. We have committed to reach every Australian home on all three platforms, the fibre, the fixed wireless and the satellite. This is not without controversy. We've also said there'll be a cross-subsidy. And that means that people in regional areas pay a lot less than they would otherwise pay for access to broadband, and people in the cities, by definition, pay a little bit more each. Now, we think that's a very fair system. If Australia Post can send a letter to anywhere in Australia for one price, we can transmit something on the National Broadband Network to anywhere in Australia for one price. So we are building in equity and subsidy into the core of the National Broadband Network. We will happily sit down with Vision Australia and Jenny and her department to make sure that no one gets left behind in this transition. We don't want to see a situation where suddenly a program is phased out without everybody who are the beneficiaries of it already being covered. So we're more than happy to ensure. The whole point of the NBN, the whole point of the NDIS is to say It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter what your circumstance. We want to make sure that you are brought along with the rest of Australia to enjoy the benefits. So I'd happily work with Vision Australia and Jenny and her department to ensure that. And could I say thank you for those kind words about my department? You know, government departments get a bit of a hard time most times when you hear people talking about them, but I will pass on to the department your kind words so that they know that the work they're doing is really valued by yourselves.
Hello, Senator. My name's Natalie Kutry. With the advent of the national broadband network, I think there's an opportunity now to have a look at accessible electronic voting and the possibility of people being able to vote in their own homes, and you know, and rather than have to go to a centre to vote. And I think that's something.
Yeah. No. Look, that's a great one. I mean, people often say to me, why isn't Parliament now just voting electronically? And there are some days I wish that I could. But I've also been to the US, and I watched the US Congress. So I stood there in one of the windows above the floor of the US Congress. And to vote, they do have electronic voting. To vote there, you have to put your key in and turn the key, and then you can vote. And what I witnessed was clearly an arrangement had been made, and four or five members or senators had left their keys in their desks so that they could be turned on. And one person went along and flicked four votes. And I thought, oh, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if that quite is the way it's meant to work. The biggest question mark people have is just about security, to make sure that the integrity of the process is maintained. The second is, and this is something where we are trialling different states, and the Commonwealth have been trialling electronic voting in the last couple of elections. And the one thing that, as someone who's a practitioner, literally, I've handed out the how to vote cards, I've scrutinised after the ballots, I've looked at the papers, I've argued whether that's a one or a two or a blank or a seven. I've done all of those things. The one thing that, to assure yourself that the process is open and transparent, is you want to be able to look at the source. And the one problem that we've had, my understanding and experience, I think it's the VEC, but if it wasn't them, I apologise to them, is that you say, OK, we'd like to check. When you got a close ballot, we'd like to check and scrutineer the votes. And there isn't necessarily the same capacity to view each ballot paper. So we've just got to make sure that some of those really key integrity measures that we have with the physical votes can be transferred. Many people would say, oh, look, I'm never going to read a book on my tablet. So, you know, I like to see the newspapers in the morning. I want to touch it. I want to feel it. That's very real. I'd have said that to you a year ago. I'd have said to you, I always want newspapers in the morning. We don't order newspapers in the morning. I've got the programs, download them all on my iPad. And now I feel better about it. So I suspect voting electronically is going to go through a slow process as people gain comfort and trust to maintain the integrity in that process. But yes, ultimately, people will have the capacity, if we go down that path, for everyone to ultimately vote from home. But there's just those integrity issues, and as someone who's stood there and argued over a ballot paper and whether that's a one or a seven, it'll take a little while for people to relax about that.
We have time for one final question.
Good afternoon, Senator. My name is Ramona Mandy. I'm a client of Vision Australia and an audio description on TV listener. I second my former speaker's comments and praise about the different projects that your government is doing for vision impaired people and disabled people in general. My question is in relation to the household assistance scheme eligibility for talking set-top boxes. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that currently the scheme will allocate for free talking set-top boxes for those vision impaired people that have analog television only. And I'm wondering if the government would be giving consideration to extending that to people that are vision impaired that have a digital television, because the television's still inaccessible without a talking set.
No, look, that's a very good point. Thank you for raising that. I think that's something we should have a conversation about. As we're going around turning off 13 million homes TVs, Some of the details get lost along the way, and I think that's a really good point you've just made. So I'd be keen to talk to Vision Australia about that, and just see what we can do in terms of funding. So that's a very good point.
Thank you again. Senator, it's been fantastic for having you here with us today. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for being willing to take questions from the audience as well. I have for you a very small token of our appreciation. This is a wooden bowl. I would say it's about 100 centimetres across, handcrafted by participants in one of our life skill workshops. Oh, no. 100 millimetres. I'm sorry. I still think in imperial. I do apologise. I'm being told on my left it's 100 millimetres across. A very large bowl, you all imagined me presenting to the Senator. The wooden bowl has been handcrafted by participants in one of our life skill workshops in Brisbane, so I hope it will remind you of us.
This is a Talking Vision special on Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia. And we come now to the final phase of the AGM day lunch. And listen out now, you 5RPH listeners. Very soon you may hear a familiar voice. MC for the day, General Manager Fundraising Jan Chisholm, has now handed the microphone to Vision Australia Chair Kevin Murfitt.
The next part of the afternoon is about celebrating the achievements of people who are blind or have low vision and acknowledging those who go the extra mile to consider the needs of our community. To start with, I'd like to acknowledge the extraordinary achievements of three athletes who are blind or have low vision and who won gold at the recent London Paralympic Games. Adelaide tandem cyclists Felicity Johnson and Kieran Modra, and swimmer Prue Watt, who has worked with us here at Vision Australia. To bring home gold for Australia is a truly outstanding achievement, and we congratulate these three young people and the other Australian medalists wholeheartedly. I'd also like to acknowledge recently retired volunteer Marjorie West. Marge, as I said to you at the celebration last weekend at the Melbourne Arts Centre, for your contribution to audio description of live theatre, your passion and dedication to providing equal access to information over the past three decades is second to none. We're so pleased that you've joined us for lunch today. Thanks, Marge. Since 2006, we've recognised organisations, community groups and individuals who have contributed to ensuring that people who are blind or have low vision can be independent and choose how they wish to live their lives. In fact, early next month, our executive team will be travelling to our regional centres to present our Community Making a Difference certificates. But this afternoon, I have four very special awards to announce. The annual Vision Australia Awards. And I'd like to invite Senator Conroy back up again to help us present these awards. The first award, the Vision Australia Client Services Award, goes to Peter Greco. Unfortunately, Peter can't be here with us today. He's from Adelaide. But I'd like to share his achievements with you. And afterwards, Peter has recorded a special message for us. For over 20 years, Peter Greco has tirelessly and consistently represented our community of people who are blind or have low vision as a volunteer broadcaster with 5RPH Adelaide. He began with the disability sport and recreation focused Leisure Link on Saturday evenings
And from 1993, he has presented Blindness and Low Vision Centred Focal Point on Wednesday evenings. In 1998, he started the Vision Extra program, which also runs on Wednesday evenings. Each week, Peter presents 2.25 hours of content. He's the prime voice of the blind on radio in Adelaide. Peter leads a strong team of production and other personnel, most of whom are also people who are blind or have low vision. Like Peter, the loyalty and tenacity of these people is confirmed through up to 2 decades of active service. Now I'd like to throw to Stephen Jolly to introduce Peter Greco.
Peter, you're about to be heard by a gathering of around 70 people here at Vision Australia in Melbourne. The guest of honour is Senator Stephen Conroy, Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy. Vision Australia Chair Kevin Murfitt has just announced to the audience of members, donors and other supporters that the 2012 Vision Australia Client Service Award winner is you. What would you like to say to us?
Thank you. I'm delighted, a little bit embarrassed, certainly very humbled in a sense of, am I worthy? I think I'd like to accept this on behalf of pretty much anyone who's blind or vision impaired. I like to call actually subliminal advocacy. I think everyone that goes about their day-to-day work who's blind or vision impaired advocates in their own way, whether it be friends of family or friends of relatives, whether it be work colleagues, people on transport, maybe getting some audio announcements as well. I think everyone does their stuff and advocates in that sort of way. So on behalf of all those people, I'd like to dips me lid to you and say thank you. Those people could include members, supporters, volunteers, staff, management, dare I say even board of management of organisations like Vision Australia. So again, I say thank you. I'd also like to obviously thank the management and staff of RPH for giving me the opportunity in the first place and making sure that swipe card I use still gets me into the station. That's always very reassuring. And the team that's helped me out over the years. There's a number of people who are blind or vision impaired that are part of that team, and I really value their expertise and their contribution and their friendship. And to them, I also say thank you. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in spirit today. In fact, I am there in spirit today. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person today. The planets just didn't align and I couldn't make it. So I'm there in spirit and I'm also there in this audio format, which I guess for a Vision Australia AGM is probably a fairly appropriate way for me to be represented. So again, thank you and I hope everyone has a great day.
Wonderful. The next award is the Vision Australia Youth Service Award for individuals 25 years and younger. That just counts me out. Shucks. It goes to Christine Casey. Originally from Queensland, Christine is self-taught in Braille music and has been an active participant at the National Braille Music Camp held annually in Mittagong since she was 10 years of age. In 2008, Christine received a Vision Australia Further Education bursary while studying for her Bachelor of Music at the University of Southern Queensland. Upon completion, Christine undertook a Diploma of Education and is currently teaching music in a mainstream school. Christine is passionate about teaching music to all children. She has worked as a visiting teacher for a young student who is blind and taught Braille music at the statewide Vision Resource Centre here in Donvale. She has also led the Junior Chamber Choir and has been a leader at the National Braille Camp. This year, she has taken on the role of President of the Organising Committee. In addition to her volunteer role with the National Braille Camp, Christine's other involvements include teaching at Sunday School, participating on the university's Disability Advisory Committee and her role on Vision Australia's Library and Information Services Advisory Committee. Christine is a truly deserving recipient of this year's Vision Australia Youth Service Award.
Blindness and vision impairment community who just make a wonderful contribution, and I particularly think of others involved in the National Braille Music Camp. There's probably about 15 people who annually volunteer a week of their time, take time off work to go and teach the up-and-coming vision impaired musicians. So yeah, thank you very much for the honour of receiving this award.
Congratulations, Christine. Now I'd like to present the Vision Australia Award Corporate, which goes to the National Australia Bank. While Katie Modra, head of ATMs and self-service, makes her way up here, I'll explain why they've received this important award. The National Australia Bank, or NAB, was the first financial institution in Australia to introduce an accessible, audio-enabled ATM over a decade ago. And they continue to be a leader in equitable banking solutions today. Thanks very much, Katie, for considering the needs of our community. We look forward to more great things from the National Australia Bank.
Thank you. And firstly, this award is very heavy, so I think I'll be doing my weights right now. I'm just personally thrilled to be here to be able to accept this award, and the relationship that we have with Vision Australia is very important to NAB, and our commitment is that we're going to continue to ensure that, you know, we provide staff, products, and in my case, machines, that provide acceptable business services to a variety of different people with different disabilities. So thank you for the award.
Well done. Thanks, Katie. Congratulations, Katie. Our final award, the Vision Australia Award Individual, goes to Lauren Nicholson. Coming up, Lauren. For once, you're not on that tandem bike, which you've ridden just about everywhere else in Australia. Lauren Nicholson was declared legally blind around the age of 4. However, he was determined not to let his disability exclude him from living a full life. Now he is an accomplished classical guitarist, published author, and motivational speaker, as well as being a dedicated advocate and fundraiser for Vision Australia. Last year, with his son Andrew, Lauren rode a tandem bike 1,800 km from Brisbane to Melbourne. Not only that, at the end of the ride, he swapped his bike for a classical guitar and performed at Vision Australia's Carols by Candlelight on Christmas Eve. This ride raised more than $4,000 and generated around $1 million in unpaid media for Vision Australia. But it was just his latest adventure in a long list. Prior to this, In March 2010, Lauren, along with his brother Dean, rode tandem bikes an incredible 4,000 k's from Fremantle to Sydney, raising $15,000 and generating $130,000 in unpaid media. And in 2007, Lauren rode 275 k's traversing the Great Dividing Range from Tamworth to Port Macquarie with cycling partner John Eder. What amazing achievements, Lauren. It really is a pleasure to be able to present you with the Vision Australia Award today.
Thank you very much, everybody. And by the way, I did fly this morning down here from Brisbane to be with you all here today at the lunch. Well, when I received the notification that I was the winner of this award, I was deeply humbled and very grateful. It was actually quite a surprise to hear about this amazing award and opportunity. I guess as a young boy growing up, didn't really think what amazing things could I do to try and win awards and try and get $1 million worth of media coverage and that sort of thing. But I have so many people just to thank. And first and foremost is Megan Bishop, who has just been an amazing support and one-stop-shop connection to Vision Australia for me with many projects that we've worked on over the last few years. And without her help and helping to liaise and organise such massive events, it just would not have happened. And I also, along with her, need to acknowledge Clubs Australia and Clubs New South Wales, who were just a huge support again, not only in helping to organise those rides, the Blind Courage Expeditions, but also the massive financial donations that were contributed through their organisation as well. So I'm very grateful to them. And can I just finally say that it is indeed my honour to be here, to have been able to ride across Australia and to Carols by Candlelight. I've been on the Carols four times now, and it's been, you know, my honour to do that on behalf of Vision Australia and on behalf of all blind Australians. So thank you very much.
Congratulations again to all those very worthy winners, and thank you again, Senator Conroy. That brings the formal part of this luncheon to a close, so now please enjoy the rest of your meal. Thank you.
Vision Australia Chair Dr. Kevin Murfitt bringing proceedings to a close on AGM Day for Vision Australia. It all took place this year in Melbourne at the Kooyong Centre on Friday the 26th of October. If you'd like to hear those proceedings again, they'll be available from the Vision Australia website in the very near future. If not there already, just go to visionaustralia.org, visionaustralia.org. Now, while we have a few minutes up our sleeve, I'd like to bring you some of a feature we broadcast earlier in the year on Talking Vision about Vision Australia's Quality Living Program. This program provides an opportunity for people living through the onset of their vision loss to talk with others who have been experiencing the same change in their life. The programs are conducted via telephone and sometimes face-to-face. Let's have this feature about Vision Australia's Quality Living Program.
I was devastated. I couldn't drive. I was just told in the hospital, sorry, you can't drive anymore. We won't tell anybody, but you've got vision loss. You can't drive.
That was Joanne recalling how it was when she was told she had lost her sight. More from her later, and also from Bruce, who, like thousands of others, has had a similar experience. Today, we'll find out a little about what Vision Australia offers people through that transition from a visually reliant life to living with vision loss, with special emphasis on the remarkable Quality Living Program. Let's hear more from Joanne now, Joanne Sherman, who lives at Lisarow on the central coast of New South Wales.
I lost my vision about 4.5 years ago after surgery. I woke to find that I'd had a stroke and lost 50% of my vision.
So the surgery was quite unrelated to your eyes?
It was, yes. It was in my neck.
Mm. How much of your vision did you lose at that time?
I lost half of my vision, 50%.
Yeah. And has it changed since then?
No. I still have a 50% loss.
So how did you feel about that at the time? Can you tell us how it was for you?
I was devastated. I couldn't drive. I was just told in the hospital, sorry, you can't drive anymore. We won't tell anybody, but you've got vision loss. You can't drive. And I was devastated because driving was part of my job.
This had come as a complete surprise to you?
Total surprise.
And your family?
I have two daughters and a husband, and they were devastated too. They didn't know how to handle me. They wanted to wrap me in cotton wool and protect me for a while.
So tell us about that period as you and your family were responding to this sudden change in your life over the next few weeks and months.
Well, I couldn't adjust to it. It was such a shock to me. My life had totally changed. As you know, I said, I thought my life was over. It was devastating for me. I guess I just hid away from it. I didn't want to know about it. I thought it would go away, but of course it didn't.
So what did you do about it, Joanne?
For a while I didn't do anything. I just sat in a corner of my home and hoped that it would go away and my life would get back to normal again. Then one day I went to my doctor and she said, well, you need to do something. You need to get some help.
And what did you do then about getting help? Where did you think of going to?
Well, she rang Vision Australia and booked me an appointment. So I went along to my appointment and thought, well, you know, sort of maybe there are somebody else out there like me, somebody that doesn't have all their vision, can't do the things they used to.
More from Joanne shortly. Let's hear from Bruce Blackshaw now. Bruce lives at Croydon Park in Sydney.
I lost vision in June 2010. I had a couple of mini strokes at the backs of the eyes where the eyeball joins the optic nerve. And it was an inflammation and I lost vision. So I've got snowy sort of vision and blotchy and it's left me legally blind. It basically happened overnight. No warning at all. I went to bed one night, the next day I woke up and I'm in this hazy condition. So.
Tell us how you felt about that.
I was absolutely devastated. I had no idea what to do, where to go. I went to an ophthalmologist and then he told me I was legally blind and I just didn't know what to do. He told me I wasn't going back to work and I was just absolutely beside myself.
What sort of work were you doing?
I was a head teacher at TAFE. I was a teacher of fitting and machining, so we measured things down to microns, which is really, really, really small measurements. One day I'm doing that, the next day I couldn't count fingers. So it was pretty traumatic for me.
What about your family?
My wife was extremely supportive. She's really, really good that way. My son and daughter didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to approach me, what to say. They took it pretty hard as well. My wife was just absolutely beside herself. We didn't know what to do.
You're a person who's used to achieving what you set out to do. You left school, I think, at about the age of 16. You took out an apprenticeship, you studied, you worked your way up to being a head teacher at a TAFE. How did you feel about now being in a situation where control of your destiny was taken away from you?
As I say, I was absolutely devastated. I'd always been in control. I'd always been a foreman or a leading hand or a head teacher or assistant director at a TAFE at Ultima. And I was always driving forward, and then suddenly there was nothing there. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything. I was looking for some answers and some reason, and there wasn't any.
Yeah. Did you think it would come good that you'd get your sight back, or did you know that it wasn't going to happen?
Well, when the ophthalmologist first told me that I was legally blind, I said, just give me some pills and we'll fix it up. And he said, there is no pills. There's no magic wand. And I just had to come to grips with that at first, and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. What did you do over the following weeks and months?
Once we got over the initial shock, I looked around for what I could do, and I didn't know what to do. So I made contact with Vision Australia. We got a referral through the ophthalmologist. I went up to the low vision clinic and was assessed, and I saw the occupational therapist, and then she gave me some ideas of what to do. And then she suggested that I get into a quality living group.
More shortly from Bruce, but let's first now find out more about these quality living groups. Cameron Elgee from Vision Australia is a quality living group coordinator.
This is a program that's been going now in Vision Australia for over 22 years, but forms part of a worldwide use of peer support networks dealing with people who've got, say, a long-term illness, where they can really come together and often for the first time talk about what's going on in their lives.
So how does the program actually work?
Well, there's two types of groups. One is a face-to-face group where people will come together in a centre. That's normally consists of about 10 or 12 people. That has its obvious logistical difficulties. And the other mode we operate with is a teleconference where we'll organise people, and they could be all over Australia, coming together on a telephone conference. They then operate through a program where on the first day they'll really open up discussion and tell each other about what's happening in their lives, what are the difficulties they're encountering and what are the things that they feel they need and so on. So we'll, from that point, we'll establish the program. So it's very much individually tailored to that group. And while there's often common themes with vision loss, so a younger group, for example, would have different needs to a group in their older age, and therefore the program's tailored to meet that group's needs. That's then organised by the facilitator, like myself, who gets the speakers in, organises the program and organises the discussion.
Mm. What do people tell you that they get out of it? Because at the start, it must be a bit of an ordeal coming together with all these strangers, yeah. And you're feeling pretty miserable anyway.
That's quite right, Stephen. You often have to sort of really encourage people to come along. A lot of people don't like groups instinctively. They want to remain independent. Often the perception that independence means they have to do it all on their own. So a lot of people enter the groups with some hesitation or reluctance. But what the peer support offers is a chance to understand really what's happening, to compare themselves with others, and often that means they realise that they're not as bad as they thought they were. And then through this immense array of knowledge that we can deliver through a group, and that can include information about computers, about high and low tech, gadgets I call them, but things which will help you organise your life, information about skills, getting out and about, and even the simple question like, well, how do you explain vision loss to others can be addressed in such a group. The end result is that they find that they regain the skills and confidence to do it, and through that process, they'll get enormous confidence to go back on organising their lives.
You have low vision yourself.
That's right.
Does that contribute to your role?
Oh, I think so. I think the minute I say to clients, look, I've got low vision too, or poor vision, whatever phrase I'll use, I do note a sudden change where they're much more prepared then to sort of talk about themselves. And in that way, I think that encourages them to participate when they realise, I've got vision loss too, and they see me as a mentor and a leader as well.
Cameron Elgee, a coordinator of Vision Australia's Quality Living Program. This is Talking Vision. We're talking about the onset of vision loss, its impact on the individual and people around them. So let's find out about the experience that Joanne and Bruce had with Vision Australia. Firstly, you, Joanne, what sort of reception did you get when you first went to Vision Australia?
I felt like I was amongst friends. There was somebody there that may be able to help me.
And what did Vision Australia offer you?
They offered me different people to talk to. They offered me counsellors that I could talk to, people that could come into my home and see if there was anything I needed to help with my vision loss. And
suddenly I started to think, wow, this is fantastic. Maybe I can cook again. Maybe I can do some gardening again. Some of the things I used to love.
And what have been the outcomes of that contact with Vision Australia for you now? What has it done for your life?
It's absolutely changed my life. I was called in 2008 and asked if I would be part of a quality living group. And that changed my life forever, for the positive. I had totally lost my confidence and I had no independence at all. So listening to other people that had the same problem as me and had, I learnt actually from their experiences. It was wonderful. Suddenly I could cook again. I used to love to entertain, but one day my daughter got cranky with me because she found me sitting in the back of the room. I didn't want anybody to know I had vision loss. I wouldn't talk to anybody. And through that quality living group, I spoke to people that had the same type of loss, vision loss as me, and how they had regained their confidence and how they were now independent, and I wanted to be like that.
And what now? How are you travelling these days?
These days I've found myself a job. I now work a couple of days a week. I've become totally independent. I plan everything and organise my life so that it's easy for me now. If I need to catch a bus, then I totally plan that experience before it happens. My home is totally organised. I know where everything is. And it's through my experiences with the Quality Living Group that I've learnt to do these sorts of things.
What sort of work are you doing?
Right, I'm a qualified accountant and I had worked with my company for 27 years before they said to me, we don't want you anymore. You've got vision loss, you can't drive, you can't do your job. I've now found myself a job doing some accounting work and also administration. So I feel fantastic again. I'm working. I love working. I loved my job.
There may be people listening to this conversation, Joanne, who have gone through the experience of sight loss that you went through. What advice do you have for those people?
Well, I learned from other people's experiences, and I think everybody out there in a similar situation or the same situation can learn from other people. And through the Quality Living Group, I experienced and learned from other people. And today I have total confidence and independence, and I've been able to go out and get myself a job doing things that I love.
It's been terrific speaking with you, and all the very best in the future.
Thank you, Stephen.
Joanne Sherman from Lisaro on the central coast of New South Wales. Let's go back to Bruce Blackshaw now to hear a little of his experience with Vision Australia.
That Quality Living Group was a group of people that had vision loss, all sorts of different types of vision loss. Some had gradual MD. Some people had sudden loss like myself. And there was an 8-week program where we had emotional counselling and we learnt about the services of Vision Australia, which was really, really good. It got me over the hump. It pulled me through all the trauma that I was feeling.
Yeah, how did you feel when you were just starting out with that quality living program?
Oh, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know anything. I was just an emotional wreck. I was just all over the place. And just being there and feeling the same feelings from other people and realising that it wasn't just me, it was other people, and that my vision loss wasn't as bad as other people, so I felt pretty lucky after a while that I had some sort of sight as opposed to none at all. And the facilitator and the peer support people were absolutely excellent.
What did you get out of that? Why has it been a good thing for you to be involved with it?
The Quality Living Group gave me lots of information and support in that I learnt about the services of Vision Australia. I was introduced to different people that could help me, like the library services, so I could read. I can't read anymore, obviously, and how to get around that in the adaptive technology and getting a closed-circuit television so I could read the paper. And just all the counselling and the support services and knowing what's available. That I had no idea what was available. Like before I had this, I just thought blind people were black blind type stuff.
Yes, yeah. What's your life all about now?
Well, I'm because of the quality living group, I've moved on. I'm starting to take control again. I'm a cane user, so people are aware that I can't see them, but they can see me. And I've taken on some further study, and I'm doing some research into employment for blind people.
How are your family these days?
Family's good. My wife is really supportive. My son's still a bit tentative. My daughter's a lot better. She's got with it now. I've got a little grandson. He understands that I'm blind because he grabs my white cane and taps it on the ground all over the place. So it's good.
Good on him. There might be people listening thinking, it's about time I did get myself organised. I can't stay in this limbo all the time. What's your advice?
Get to Vision Australia as soon as you can. Go to the local client groups. Become involved because there is a lot of people out there that will support you, help you, guide you, and just being able to talk to someone that knows and feels what you're feeling really does help. It's just amazing.
Bruce Blackshaw from Croydon Park in Sydney. Good to talk to you, Bruce.
And to you, Stephen. Thank you.
To find out more about the Vision Australia Quality Living Program, you can call 1300 847466 anytime during business hours. 1300 847466. And we hope you found that of interest, that little feature on Vision Australia's Quality Living Program. That just about brings us to the end of this Talking Vision special. Thank you to all stations around the country who've taken the presentation. And don't forget that on the station you're listening to now, you can hear our weekly Talking Vision radio program, which focuses on issues of blindness and low vision. So check with your local station for the time of that regular weekly program from Vision Australia Radio, Talking Vision. This has been a Talking Vision special. Thanks to all involved with putting everything together. I'm Stephen Jolly. Glad you could be with us, and we'll talk to you again soon. See you.
You can contact Vision Australia by phoning us anytime during business hours on 1300 847466. That's 1300 847466. Or by visiting visionaustralia.org. That's visionaustralia.org.